90 KFGO and Super Talk 1270 KLXX. Aaron Burst is with the and actually is the director of the State's Attorneys Association in North Dakota. And Sergeant Tom Iverson is with the North Dakota Highway Patrol. I want to tie these two gentlemen into our conversation here. Aaron, good to have you on News and Views. Do I got you?
Thanks for having us, Joel.
Glad to. And Sergeant Tom, you there?
I am here. Thank you.
Oh, there you go. Aaron, first off, describe to people what the new laws are, what they do, and what the changes are.
Well, thanks, Joel. Again, essentially, the DUI laws changed in July 1st, and they do a couple of things. But first off, they double all the penalties. They criminalize refusal. So if you refuse a test, it's treated like a DUI. And it increases, it basically creates a new law called vehicle homicide. So if you're DUI and you hurt somebody, there's significant penalties.
All right. So, and this was very, very covered, but I think that people still have different opinions on exactly, what happens on that first DUI offense. Second one, it even gets tougher, doesn't it, Aaron?
Correct. On the second one, you'd be looking at 10 days minimum mandatory in jail. And I know you've covered it a lot. I appreciate that. But we want to continue to get the word out that we'd rather not prosecute anybody for this, just have a safe ride home.
Well, I think the whole point in this, Sergeant Iverson, is maybe the extent of the new law can be a deterrent to people even thinking about it.
You know what? I would definitely agree with that. The law got a lot of publicity throughout the legislative process and also afterward now with the implementation starting July 1. And that is something that we are hoping for. It's hard to measure. In fact, it's pretty much impossible to measure. But we hope that it is providing as a deterrence for the people out there to maybe think twice about it. If these laws are a lot stiffer, I tend to think that people will make better decisions and think twice about their actions.
Aaron Burst, you work with state's attorneys on a daily basis. They're the ones that, after the Highway Patrol bring them in, they're going to make decisions in terms of what they can and cannot charge out. What's their attitude about the new law?
You know, as of now, it's been pretty generally accepted, especially in the larger jurisdictions that have a real comfort level. Prosecuting DUIs is not easy. If you don't have some experience with it, sometimes there's a little you're a little gun shy. But generally, it's been fairly well accepted.
All right. And as far as being able to be out there on the front lines and have to enforce this law, Sergeant Iverson, what's the attitude of the patrol?
You know what? Overall, we are very excited about the law. It makes things a little bit easier for us as far as dealing with kind of our repeat offenders and people that kind of knew how to work the system a little bit with refusing tests. It criminalized the refusal. So it's a charge. It's a separate charge to actually refuse a test, and it also it's also condition of being under the influence or driving under the influence. So it is very important that people be taking these tests. Otherwise, you can be charged separately for an actual refusal.
I want to make sure I understand this though. And Aaron, I'm going to go to you for this one. If I get picked up, I know I'm drunk when I'm driving, and I refuse the test. And then 6 months later, I get picked up DUI again, and I get a DUI. Is that considered my second DUI because I refused that test on the first one?
Correct. If you have been criminally convicted of the refusal, it's just like a first-time DUI, and the next time would be second time.
And Sergeant Iverson, that's really what you're getting at, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yep, that would be the same line of thinking that we are on also.
Okay, I want to make sure people have access to you. 1-800-880-5346. I want to make sure this punches up. There we go. Kevin, you're on. You got a question of one of the gentlemen, Kevin.
Blood alcohol content. Am I okay?
I'm sorry, Kevin. Repeat that, can you? Okay, I'm trying, Kevin. Get yourself a better cell phone. Amy, did you understand? Because you got a chance to talk to him.
Yeah, his question was about the blood alcohol level, whether or not that changed.
That stayed at 0.08, right, guys? Aaron?
That is correct.
Okay. Sergeant Tom, when you look at all of that, is there this any leeway whatsoever with individuals that are out there? If they're close to a 0.08, are you still hauling them in, or where do you sit with that?
You know what? We are. If they are close to a 0.08, it's something that we have to take seriously. If we routinely let people go or maybe give them a ride home if they're at a 0.081, 0.082, well, that's not serving any purpose. Yes, they are close, but you got to remember that they're already have been consuming several beverages to get up to that point. So we do not give any breaks with it. So it's very important that people understand that.
Aaron, Joel, if I could just piggyback on that, though. The public needs to understand, and Tom would tell you this too, the average BAC of people we pick up is a 1.7 to 1.6, so double the legal limit for the average. So although I agree with Tom that the 0.8, you don't need to cut a break there, those generally aren't the people we're picking up.
Yeah, I get that, Aaron. I do. Where I would have asked more questions in the legislature was on the 0.08, and that came down as a federal mandate. Remember, Aaron?
I mean, I do. I was around during that time, and I do remember that.
Yeah, and I know a lot of people have a lot of discussions on whether it should have been 0.08 or whether it should have been 0.10. You know, and so I know that different counties and different areas have looked upon it differently. And Aaron, what you're saying is from the state's attorney's side, it's going to be pretty uniform out there.
Generally, yes. But I would say the legislature did make a policy decision that the minimum mandatories for those first-time offenders does depend on the BAC. And at this point, at 0.16 triggers the two-day minimum mandatory. So the legislature said under 0.16, we're not going to require the jail time.
Yeah. If you're that hammered, then we are going to get you, though.
Correct.
Let's get to Mark. Mark, you have a question for the gentleman.
Yeah. I guess I got two quick questions. First of all, can you refuse the field sobriety test? Not the breathalyzer, but just, you know, the walk the line, touch your nose, those sort of things. Can you refuse those?
I'll take this one. Yes, you can. The only time it becomes criminal is when they ask you to do the screening test, which we call, it used to be the SD5, and we've moved to a new device, but the screening test and the evidentiary-based test.
Okay. And then my second question is, in your opinion, do you feel that the blood alcohol level is an accurate benchmark to how impaired a person is? Or because everybody's different. Joel will be different than a 105-pound girl. So should it be based upon your level of impairment, I guess, is my question.
Okay. Thanks, Mark.
Great question. I would say the research is out there. There's vast amounts of research that should say anybody who's over the 0.8 is impaired. I would ask Tom what his assessment was on people who are over the 0.8.
Yeah, Sergeant Iverson, your guys are right out there. You see them. What do you think about the 0.08?
You know what? I think that is a good benchmark. One thing, I guess with that being said, one thing that we kind of have to understand with the 0.08 is that although you may not be falling down drunk at that point, your judgment is impaired and you may feel that you're fine to drive. I know I'm kind of giving the stereotypical answer that we are always preaching, but it is important to know that our judgment is impaired at that point, and there is plenty of research out there showing that a 0.08, you are showing quite a few signs of impairment.
I'm not trying to be a contrarian. I promise, Sergeant Iverson, I'm not. But, but you know, truck drivers have to be subject to 0.04.
Yes, you
know, I mean, and the advocates for, you know, anti-drinking and driving, I get that. And I certainly understand the passion that they bring to the argument and the history that they bring to the argument. But you could also, if you got them in a room, they'd push for nothing. You know, so at some point you have to pick a level, which is why I brought up the debate of whether it should be 0.10 or 0.08. And the difference, and Aaron, you get this just as well as anyone, when the feds came down and said, you don't get the money unless you go to 0.08, the horse was out of the barn. It's done, isn't it?
I'd agree. And in fact, the Minnesota listeners will remember they were the last state to go to the 0.08. The only thing I would kind of disagree with is if it was just kind of a political-driven movement, I would agree with you. But there is vast amount of research where alcohol is a legal product. You can bring people in, you can test them, and that's where they come up with those levels.
Okay, let's get Tim on with you. Tim, you're on with Sergeant Iverson and Aaron Burse. Go ahead.
Are you off the hook at 0.07?
Okay, appreciate the call.
Yep. Technically, no, because you could be convicted of DUI in a number of different ways. the 08 is what everybody kind of has in the back of their mind, but you could actually be below the legal level but still be impaired. Now, generally, you know, a prosecutor would look at that and look at the level and how you're doing on the other tests, and then they got to make an assessment. But technically, you could be convicted of below 08.
Sergeant, if somebody comes into one of your squad cars and is at .07, what's your approach to it?
You know what? Very good question. That does happen. It's somewhat rare. I mean, it does happen once in a while. Typically, if you know your own state's attorney's area, you know how they're going to handle the situation, might kind of tend to how you deal with that situation out on the road. But each person is kind of different. You can kind of be falling down drunk at a .07, which, as Mr. Burst pointed out, you can be arrested for that, but it doesn't happen real often, once in a while. And we actually have, I remember a few cases where successfully prosecuted those cases, but just not real often.
Aaron, do you think that this, you know, with just exactly what Sergeant Iverson said, how the state's attorneys approach this in a given geographic area, do you think that this is going to end up being somewhat political in how state's attorneys are picked? If you have a state's attorney who sits there and has somebody at .07 and said, no, the law is this, you know, you know, if they get tougher on it, they're more subject to not find themselves being a state's attorney very long.
Well, and that is a concern. I mean, most state's attorneys are elected officials, so they have to deal with their communities. But generally, I found that the communities are supportive of enforcement, because the community knows that they might not be impaired, but somebody might be out on the road and they don't want them out on the road. So, but that is a factor to consider, which is probably a whole new news show too.
Yeah, no question. Guys, I think it's great that you're getting information out. And the intent of the law was to deter. And certainly by getting this information out, it does have a deterrence to it. And I guess in the end, about a year from now, we're going to find out what the statistics show. And Sergeant Iverson, by now it's been in place long enough. Have you seen DUI arrests go down already?
I wish I had some numbers to back that up, but if I were a betting man, I would say no.
Okay. Interesting. I guess a year from now will be a good gauge, or maybe 6 months from now. But
yes, absolutely.
Sergeant Iverson, thanks for coming on News and Views.
Yes, thank you for having us.
Appreciate it. Aaron Burst, as always, good to talk to you.
Hey, thanks a lot, Joel. Have a great day.